You know, some of the people I follow on Substack, one lady today has a Substack article. I'm going to write one when the show is over today, all about this, about how there seems to be now that the regime is actually attacking or is paying mercenaries to attack food supplies. In other words, the propaganda war that they're waging and they're winning is being compounded by the war on the supply chain and food. And they just keep rinsing and repeating. The U.S. has squandered what seemed to be, this is Frank Wright, freedom of speech in wartime. The U.S. has squandered what seems to be an unchallengeable global dominance in this last reckless gambit, a war which it forced by its own deliberate brinksmanship, and one which is losing on the ground and on the airwaves. Chaos at home and abroad is the new normal. Of all the wars it has lost in the last 70 years, all of them, this is by far the most damaging. It is a war that ended in 1989 with the fall of communism, and it has taken them 30 years to lose it despite the odds of winning. You know, when you think about this, folks, I'm just going to pause right there quickly. What happened to this thing that we called the peace dividend? That's basically Frank Wright's theme. Do you remember, in 1989 when Soviet Union began to break up? Then by 1991, it was done. All the states of the former USSR had seceded, and Soviet communism ended in almost all of them. Do you remember this? This is supposed to bring about an end to what was called the Cold War, which again was another propaganda term. We had to fight a Cold War. Why? because we have to. Why? Because we got to fight communism. Okay, I'm opposed to communism. Can't we just fight it here? No, we got to fight it over there. All communism did was leave the Soviet Union and move into American universities. Frank Wright, it has staked everything on this one, only to be staring failure in the face. For the regime, this is an existential matter. If it is seen to lose yet again, it will be utterly discredited, having staked everything on a gambit which appears to have failed. He's talking about Biden's war against the Russians with the Ukrainians. The regime has lied to you about everything concerning Ukraine, just as it has presented a bizarre distortion of reality and practically every other issue of note for the past several years. I don't think it can recover from such a tremendous loss of face as presented by the sudden revelation that it has fabricated a completely false narrative on the scale of that scene over Ukraine. The narrative about the war, which has been packaged for our consumption, is one which cannot amount or account for the return to nation-state politics. With the sudden collapse of communism, which no intelligence agency predicted, the United States found itself the world's only superpower. Aside from the tragedy of this squandered opportunity to build on the peace dividend, a phrase we never seem to hear anymore, the United States enjoyed a period of perhaps 32 years of unchallenged global supremacy. No one refused to pick up the phone to the U.S. as they do now. It is a cruel accident of fate that the neocons, a fringe group of former Trotskyites, happen to be adjacent to U.S. power at a time it required some new invigorating idea to guide its policy through an extraordinary moment of unipolarity. The peace dividend was supposed to be the benefit of the new era of cooperation and friendship, which was to replace the Cold War. It was to be derived precisely from the elimination of enormous military budgets. inflated by the arms race between NATO and the Soviet Union. The money was supposed to instead to be spent on improving your life at home. The current U.S. Secretary of Defense serves on the board of Raytheon, one of the world's largest arms manufacturers. What followed instead of global security was a succession of wars. The next one, whose trailer we are all watching now, will be a similar exercise in handing dividends to the military-industrial complex while stimulating economic collapse throughout Europe and the wider world. So, in other words, Biden's not just presiding over the collapse of the United States, financially speaking. He's presiding over the collapse of the entire NATO apparatus. They're trying to kill it. But the reason why, you have to ask the question why. It is important to note a motive. Why? Why do we have a new minister of propaganda, misinformation, and disinformation? This woman is an absolute abomination. She's a supposedly highly educated snob, sitting there sneering down her nose and salivating at the chance to start wiping things out of existence that the regime disagrees with. Now, this is me saying all this, not Frank Wright. You only need an officer or a office of truth ministry or disinformation or misinformation when you're in a war. Maggie O'Connell's pointing out to me that there's a ministry of truth in the Harry Potter book series. Back to Frank Wright. Before that, so ask yourself the question, why is the Biden regime inside the Department of Homeland and Security erecting something called the Office for Misinformation and Disinformation? And what is the mission that's been given it? The mission is to shut you up. You are not allowed to counter the regime's narrative. You know, Richard Barrett likes to talk all the time about how on the Barrett Brief, the news of the day and the narrative that will follow, narrative matters. Brother Andre and Marie and I have been having a long, extended, and continuing conversation about meta-narratives. Why? Because the regime knows it must control the narrative. Why? Because it's in a war. And by the way, the war is not all against the Russians. The war is being waged on you and me. Back to Frank. There is no plan as to what is to come next once war is achieved, nor is there any interest in addressing the combination of inflation and recession known as stagflation. The neocon faction which directs U.S. foreign policy, and therefore that of most of NATO, has never been interested in the economic consequences of its actions. Well, you know why they're not interested? Because it doesn't affect them. They are elites. They have built-in trust fund, satanic bank accounts, funded by Beelzebub himself. They will never want for any material thing. So it doesn't, none of this matters to them. What about all the pain they're going to cause? Well, maybe they actually enjoy the pain. There is no plan as to what is to come next once war is achieved. The actions of the U.S. are simply the actions of a nation state attempting to preserve its interest. With the current faction controlling U.S.-NATO foreign policy, the interpretation of interest means asserting U.S. dominance by military force. In other words, we are converting the world to our way of thinking by the sword. What's our way of thinking? We are the world's war-making superpower. No one else. No one else gets to invade any other country without our say-so and without buying our weapons, in other words. Back to Frank Wright. It is, of course, a disastrous, if for some lucrative, policy which has led to the destruction of many nations and the reinvigoration of the enemies of the U.S. in every war it has fought since NATO was founded. Russia, too, is no innocent. Nations are not innocent. Their interests are pursued by their governments according to those governments' understanding of what their national interest is at the time. It is noteworthy that the co-founder of the neocon project for the new American century, Robert Kagan, admits that the policies of the U.S. inspired by his faction did in fact provoke the Russians to invade Ukraine. And then he quotes Kagan, and I'm not going to, you can read the entire essay if you want. We have now returned to the state of global affairs, which sees nation states acting independently of a single power bloc to serve their own interest. The war in Ukraine is Russia doing so. The proxy war waged by the U.S. and its client states is likewise an expression of that nation's interest. Neither of these actions is morally good, and neither side is on yours. This is politics on the state level. It has nothing to do with your interest, and the power struggle between nations will be presented to you in simple emotional terms matched to symbols. You may adopt these symbols in order to feel good about yourself, to feel part of something, to feel you are doing something. Which is why people are putting Ukrainian flags on their social media avatars. And some are going so far as having Ukrainian flags and Ukrainian iconography tattooed on their arms.